Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Nick Augustine here with attorney Joseph Roble from Joseph Roble Limited, the Chicago bankruptcy law firm. And this is our next in our fun series of real questions and answers here that we read for everyone on the Chicago bankruptcy update, featuring some news, information, and updates in bankruptcy law as it may come about. Of course, financial troubles are stressful, and bankruptcy can be a solution for you. If you're considering filing for bankruptcy, Joseph Roble will courteously and professionally review your finances, answer all your questions, and provide information you need to allow yourself to decide if bankruptcy makes sense, if it has value, and if it's the best way to provide relief for your financial woes. So on this program, we go through our questions and answers from real people and answer them the best we can, and I'm here with Joseph Roble. Let's say good morning to Joe Roble.
Good morning, Nick. Hope everything's okay out there in Texas.
We are doing well. We are, the ponds are at their limit, and it is very squishy outside. So it's good for plants. We don't complain about rain, but you have to wear good footwear and muddy boots.
We have the same problem here. Tremendous amount of rain this week in Chicago. Rivers are going to be flooding soon, but it happens often in the spring.
Well, and we see this, and we see the news in Iowa. The people are in, you know, they have a lot of water there too. And things like that, a natural disaster can interrupt what's going on. It can interrupt your work. Some people can't get to work. Some people work at places that are flooded. And in any economy, when whether a good economy or a bad economy, a lot of people live very close to their paydays. And things can get interrupted, and all of a sudden, one bill doesn't get paid, two bills doesn't get paid, and it can be a catastrophic effect. And for those people who are, you know, just hanging on, situations like that is a good example of when bad things can happen to good people, and bankruptcy can be a solution, and they might need it. And we'll talk about a few of the wonderful things like the automatic stay provision and everything else that is there for people to help them if bad things happen. So let's get started with our first question. We've got someone with an unpaid loan. They say, I'm being sued for this unpaid loan. If I do not contest the claim, does the repayment take place automatically? Further detail, I took out a $5,000 loan in 2016 and due to major loss of income, could not pay the loan back. I'm still struggling to get back on my feet and cannot afford to pay back the loan. I have been served with papers and need to start figuring out my line of action. Joe, what do we got?
Well, a common scenario, most financial problems result from loss of income. You lose a job, you get divorced, you get sick. Sometimes financial problems are the result of people not spending wisely. But here we have a typical situation where a lawsuit is filed. So the caller says, if I don't contest the claim, in most situations when it's simply a loan and you haven't paid, it's going to cost you a lot of money to hire a lawyer to contest the claim. And the end result is going to be most likely that the money's due and owing. If you have a very large debt, you're being sued for $50,000 or more, perhaps hiring a lawyer can make a difference. There may be some technicalities that the lawyer can find that would make it worthwhile to spend money on lawyer's fees. But here, contesting is probably not going to happen. So let's take a typical scenario. You get sued. You never go to court. What happens? The creditor attorney appears before the judge, presents papers, shows to the judge that there is money due and owing. The judge signs a court order called a judgment. Now, up until the entry of that judgment, the creditor has no way to collect money from their customer unless they can convince them, scare them, threaten them, talk them into it. Once there is a judgment, then there are legal means that the creditor can use to try to collect without having to consult with the customer. One of them is to garnish wages. That's very common. The other is to freeze a bank account. So the bottom line here, does repayment take place immediately is the question by the caller. The answer is it can happen pretty quick if the creditor knows where you're working or knows where you have a bank account. So something needs to be done. If you get served court papers and it's not worthwhile hiring an attorney, contact the creditor, work out a payment plan, or go see a local experienced bankruptcy attorney and discuss doing bankruptcy. Chapter 7 can wipe out the debt. Chapter 13, if you don't qualify for 7, can allow you to repay that debt over a period of time with affordable payments.
There you go. Really great. It's so interesting whenever we talk about the repayment plan with the Chapter 13, because people don't realize that they can a lot of times keep their home, keep their car, and make these payments back on, you know, pennies on the dollar, what they owe, over 3 to 5 years. That's a great deal. You know, most people just think of the Chapter 7. So, well, one of the things in bankruptcy is something called a 341 meeting, where notice to the creditors, right? But here it says, I have a 341 meeting soon, and I'll be returning my vehicle. Sounds like they owe money on the vehicle. It says the vehicle has a small dent. Should I file a claim to get the truck fixed with my insurance company before I surrender the vehicle in a few weeks, or surrender it as is? The damage is about $1,000, which I do not have, and there's a $500 deductible. So it looks like they're turning it in. They're in a bankruptcy. What do we got here?
This is a really good question. Sounds like this person filed a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, just from what they're discussing. And secondly, sounds like they did it without an attorney, because their attorney would be able to provide them with the following information that I'm going to provide. If they're returning the vehicle, they've decided that it's not worthwhile keeping, the monthly payments are too high, or the vehicle isn't worth it, and they know that by giving the vehicle back to the creditor, the Chapter 7 bankruptcy will discharge whatever they owe. They do not have an obligation to fix the damage to the vehicle. The creditor will just take it back. The creditor won't be able to collect money from the debtor for the damage to the vehicle. The only other issue there is, was there another car involved? Is there liability where they may owe money to the other driver? And if that's a possibility, the other driver should be listed in the bankruptcy petition as a possible creditor to protect them from being collected against.
There you go. You know, something I noticed, Joe, about this person with this question, they're interested in figuring out whether they should pay the deal with this damage to the vehicle. I mean, here's an honest person who is trying to reduce their exposure to whatever they're going to be on the hook for, try to make it better. They probably feel bad about everything that happened. And it just, again, goes to show that too often what we think about in news or media when people want to say things about bankruptcy, it's almost like they paint the picture of the, you know, overweight, greasy car salesman or something. And, you know, people who go out and swindle other people and rack up huge amounts of debt and then just say, I'm going to stiff everyone. And it's just, that's a really unfortunate picture that we portray, because I would venture a guess that most of the people that come through your doors in your office are very good, honest people who are doing everything they can, and just something happened to them, whether they got in a car wreck and someone hit them, lost a job. You know, we had people who are, you know, government shutdown, people not getting paid. I mean, just bad things happen to good people.
You know, I mean, that's a very, very good point. And in wow, I think it's now 45 years of practice. I can remember one person of all my clients who I think planned her bankruptcy, who maxed out credit cards, went on vacations, and then filed. I couldn't prove any of it. The creditors obviously didn't care, but that's the only one. And everybody else I call a reluctant filer. People do this very reluctantly. They decide to file when they determine that under their current circumstances, this makes the most sense for them to do. It's basically a business decision. It was what it boils down to. And again, they don't do it with a big smile, but a lot of times the filing of the case results in a big smile when they realize that either they've wiped out their debts and they're going on with their life and nothing else has changed, or through a Chapter 13, they've controlled their debt and they're repaying it and nothing else has changed in their life. So it's a very good law to be used properly in the right circumstances.
Right. And, you know, it's the people worry about things like credit scores, this and that, and everything. And these things can move really quickly if you work on it afterwards. And, you know, not owing all of that money and being behind the eight ball makes it a lot easier to live and make better decisions. And sometimes when we're burdened by the stress and anxiety that goes along with financial problems like that, it can be paralyzing and put us in a state where we can't seem to do anything. And then it's like when you take the shackles off and you're free, you can run. And people can't, it's incredible. Just as easy as it is to get in financial trouble, it's just as easy to get into financial success. You just got to put your mind right and just do it.
That's a good point. I've had so many clients say to me, you know, once I got the case filed and I knew I was protected and I realized that nothing else has changed in my life, I started sleeping better. I couldn't sleep for months.
Yeah.
So it's all along the same lines.
And don't co-sign for your kid. So the one piece of advice I tell so many people, don't co-sign the car for the kid. Never works out well. But
you're right.
We'll see. Maybe that'll pop up in one of our questions.
It has before.
Anyway, it has before. All right. Our next one is about an old debt that comes back. Zombie debts, maybe some call these. But this person wants to know, are they responsible for paying this bill that the collectors are now calling them, may have acquired from a charged-off account from 8 years ago? Further detail on this is, I have a few credit card accounts that became delinquent and were charged off 8 years ago. One of the original creditors sent my account to a collection agency. I've been paying the collector for the past 5 years. Then they threatened me with a judgment if I didn't pay them. Can they still take me to court considering the age of the charge-off?
Okay, so charge-off basically is a creditor is not actively collecting. They think it's a debt that may be uncollectible. Creditor is going to get a tax write-off. Never feel sorry for the creditor. They build in the interest, whether it's a credit card or a loan, the losses that they anticipate. So they know what they're doing from their end. With regard to this question, yes, they can be sued. Most states, and it does vary from state to state, how long can a creditor file a lawsuit on a debt? And if it's a contract, for Illinois and many states, it's 10 years. So if it's a credit card, how do you figure the contract would be the last time that the card was used, or when payments made, it's considered that the contract's still ongoing. So 8 years, assuming this state has a 10-year statute of limitations, would be fine. There's another issue here. We don't know from this question how much money is still due. Is there enough money still due, and are there other debts where it might make sense to stop paying and file a bankruptcy? And I always tell people, if you can avoid bankruptcy, that's always good. If there's not a lot of debt, then get it paid off and get rid of the debt and just get on with your life.
Well, another thing, too, is every creditor has a different business decision on their end because, you know, when you go into small claims court, for example, if you ever are in court and pop into the small claims room, they'll have people there from some of the credit card companies and banks. And they have a stack of lawsuits they're going through, and they're in volume. If it's a small, you know, so they handle it differently than a smaller company that might say, well, we've got to pay the lawyer to go try to collect the money or this or that. And so, you know, just like every Every situation is different. So just because one thing happened with one person or situation does not mean it's going to happen to the other people. So that's why we shouldn't get our information about making these decisions from the person behind us in line at the grocery store or grandma, you know, who had a different thing. You know, I mean, it's different for everyone. Every situation is unique.
Absolutely true.
Next question. Can I get a temporary stop on a garnishment due to surgery or no income? Says I've got some medical garnishment for over $9,000, and I've paid about $7,000 of it off. I'm having surgery at the end of the month and will not be working for about 6 weeks with no income. Can I get a temporary stop on my garnishment until I get back to work full time?
Well, the answer is they're going to get a stop on the garnishment because if they're going to be off work due to surgery and not getting paid, there's no wages to garnish. So the garnishment will stop.
Okay.
Once they go back to work, it'll start up again. This person obviously made a determination that the amount of the debt that they had, it was more worthwhile for them not to file a bankruptcy and to pay it. And that's a proper decision in the right circumstance.
There you go.
So they're a little bit misinformed about garnishment. And again, it's very simple. There's no paycheck. There's no garnishment. It'll start up again once they get back to work and they'll get this debt paid off.
It just goes to show sometimes the simplest answers may not be right in front of our nose, and we can get very kind of overwhelmed by the complicated nature of everything going on, especially with all the laws about bankruptcy, if you're trying to figure that out on your own, and the procedures involved with filing a bankruptcy, the documentation and everything else that you may need to do can be overwhelming, especially if you don't know the law and you're not a bankruptcy lawyer. Joseph Roble, meanwhile, as we've been talking here, has over 45 years experience representing clients in consumer bankruptcy. That experience is important because it ensures that your financial situation will be properly analyzed. Joseph Roble and his staff know that you're probably anxious about your financial problems, tired of harassment by creditors, and uncertain as to whether filing bankruptcy is really what you need. So if bankruptcy will help your financial situation, you'll be properly advised for which chapter you may qualify. At Joseph Roble Limited, the entire procedure from beginning to end will be clearly explained to you, and you'll receive a what to do next letter that tells what documents you need to collect and what steps you need to take. So if you do not need to file a bankruptcy, they'll tell you that. Joseph Roble Limited is not there to put you in a bankruptcy simply to earn a fee. It is a small law firm of attorneys and staff Joseph Roble Limited is a small law firm of attorneys and staff experienced in consumer bankruptcy, and they are not a bankruptcy law factory, and no one's ever gotten lost in their office. You'll be treated as a human being with courtesy and dignity that you respect. The mission at Joseph Roble Limited is to have, again, you take your control over finances through your decisions and use of the proper bankruptcy laws if it applies. Joseph Roble Limited has offices located in the Chicago Loop, in Chicago Rosemont area, and in the suburbs of Burr Ridge, Deerfield, Gurnee, Naperville, Orland Park, Schaumburg, Skokie, St. Charles, and Westchester. So they can represent clients in Cook County and the collar counties of Will, DuPage, Kane, LaSalle, Kendall, and Lake. So if you are under financial problems and you don't need the gas money to go all the way to the city or take the train, so there you go, nice and easy. And they'll explain it all and get you going. Again, we always say that sometimes the anticipation of this stuff is the worst. And once people, it's like ripping off a Band-Aid. And once you get it started, it's not that bad. All right, next question. My spouse and I jointly own our home. We're wondering about filing for bankruptcy. Can I keep the home and can I keep the car if our payments are up to date? A further detail on this question is my wife is not filing for bankruptcy, only me. The home has roughly $30,000 to $40,000 in equity and is up to date on the payments. I'm interested in filing Chapter 7 to get rid of unsecured debt, roughly $20,000, but I want to keep my home and keep my car. Joe, this is a pretty common question we get. What should this guy do? What are his options?
Yeah, very common question. One of the cars and houses, it's, you know, people who are considering bankruptcy, can I keep my car? Can I keep my house? Always this comes up. So these questions that we get are great. It's good to get out information, but sometimes people don't supply enough detail, and that's pretty common. So what we don't know is we don't know what state that they live in. Also, they talk about 30 to 40 in equity. Did they figure in the cost of selling it? When you do a Chapter 7 and you're wiping out debt, the analysis, whether you can keep a home, is take the amount for which a house can be sold, subtract the cost of sale, which is roughly 10%. At least that's a figure we commonly use in Illinois and most places. That includes broker's commission, title charges, tax credits, lawyer's fees. Subtract the mortgage or the mortgages. Then there's a net amount left, the amount that you would get as a check from a real estate sale. Every state has a different dollar amount that you would be allowed to keep from such a theoretical sale. And what I'm missing here is, besides knowing the first thing I mentioned about whether closing costs are taken into account and figuring the equity is, what state are they in? In Illinois, husband and wife, if they're filing jointly, they keep $30,000. Here, the husband is filing by himself. So you take that net that they would get from the sale, divide it in half. Half goes to the wife. His half, if it's $15,000 or less in Illinois, he keeps it. Other states, $25,000, $30,000, $50,000, it varies. So they need to speak with an experienced bankruptcy attorney in the county where they live, and they'll find out whether they can file Chapter 7 and keep their home, or because of too much equity, which by itself is not a bad thing. That's what we want in life. We want everything that we own to be worth as much as possible. But if there is too much equity for Chapter 7, then they would look at Chapter 13, work out a payment plan, pay their creditors back a percentage, maybe all of it, and keep their home without any problem. Again, as you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. Chapter 13 is a wonderful alternative to Chapter 7. When you can't do a Chapter 7 and wipe out your debt because your income is too high, or you have an asset that you would lose.
And how often are there people out there who maybe suffer more than they need to because they only know about Chapter 7 bankruptcy? They don't know that there's a Chapter 13. So it's all about spreading information and letting people know about this. So, you know, that's why I always say to people, when you hear these podcasts or find articles that we put out on the website, through the blog, social media, share this information with people. You know, even if I know that it's, you know, it's funny, bankruptcy on social media, not a lot of people want to share or engage or talk about things like that, because everyone's concerned that they're going to say, oh, it's me. No, you know, when we find information, I always say, someone out there might be able to use this. Someone should know about Chapter 13. Just telling people about information. It's all about educating consumers, and things change in the world. So what might have been true in the 80s isn't true now. And the ease of, you know, credit and all these things, they all change and things evolve over time. So always good to get the right information from right people. Okay, our next question is all about gift money. It says, I'm considering filing Chapter 7. My parents give me money every month for my car payment. How does this work in bankruptcy where my parents do not require me to pay them back? They're just giving me money for my car payment.
All right, so I'm going to assume that if they're getting help from parents to pay for a car, that their income is not very high. And let's assume it's a household of one person. So there's an income test for Chapter 7. In the Chicago area, the median income is $54,000. $238. If you make less than that in a year, then that's one of the requirements to be able to pass that test to do a Chapter 7. If you, one of the complicated issues for bankruptcy is exactly what is income. And what is considered income in most people's minds, and perhaps for the IRS, is not the same as for bankruptcy. Here, if you are being given money by family, and it's not a loan, it's a gift, that's income. So as part of the income test, we would include the income received every month, which would basically be the car loan, as part of the structuring the test. But again, based upon this situation, it's really a non-issue. It's simply one of the parts of the petition that must be filed and completed properly. The end result is it shouldn't change anything to allow them to do Chapter 7. It's a good, very good question, though. Obviously, they've done some reading, and they know that there is this income test, which, by the way, is pretty complicated. So,
yeah, not something that I would try to take on myself.
No.
Next question is about bankruptcy and student loans. We have a lot of people hear this because, again, you'll see things sometimes on Facebook or other places or news articles where you see someone talking about bankruptcy and student loans. And oftentimes it's called clickbait. They want you to click there, and it's advertisers and everything else like is going on. So, you know, there's a lot of things. Sometimes you see that shiny lure of something you'd like to be real, but reality is it's a little more complicated. And when student loans are involved in bankruptcy, we see this from time to time. So this person says, I've got a student loan for about $3,700 and another one in collections. I'm on hard times right now with my wife leaving, and I was wondering if the student loans could be erased from my credit. I do believe they are federal loans.
Student loans are non-dischargeable. Doesn't matter if it's federal or if it's a private loan from a bank. You cannot wipe out student loans in Chapter 7. There is a possibility called a hardship discharge, but the physical problems one would need to have or the mental problems one would need to have in order to get such a hardship discharge, it's not something that you want for yourself, not at all.
Right. So student loans are like the last thing you're worrying about if you have actually the can, or you know, so exactly. It could be worse too. $3,700 is, I mean, there's a lot of people who owe a lot more than that.
10 or 20 times that amount, yes, absolutely. The other thing they mentioned about, I'm wondering if student loans can be erased. Credit is not erased, credit is history. And if what is on your credit report is correct, it'll stay there. Bankruptcy doesn't erase. It simply provides a discharge indicating that you've paid the debt in a 13 or that you've eliminated it in a Chapter 7, and your credit report will reflect the bankruptcy, and it won't. It's not erased. It'll come off after a certain period of time.
Mm-hmm. All right, we got time for one last question. It's about motorcycles. All right. The rain has stopped. The sun may shine. Start up the bike. All right, this person says they want to know if I can finance a motorcycle before filing for Chapter 13. It says we have two leased cars, and I want to buy a motorcycle and turn in one car at the end of the lease. The bike payment and insurance would be half as much as the car, and it's better on gas. Would buying the bike so close to filing result in any negative action with regard to the bankruptcy? Also, if we know for sure we are going to file, should we stop paying unsecured loans and credit cards prior to filing to save up for the attorney?
So answering the last portion, when I meet with clients and if they're going to be doing a bankruptcy, I always tell them that they can just stop paying their creditors. They're in some respect they're throwing their money away because they're part of that money goes to interest. What they need to continue to pay until they get the case filed would be mortgages, rent, and vehicle payments. In this situation, there will not be a problem with the Chapter 13 by getting rid of the lease or trading that vehicle and getting a less expensive vehicle, in this case a motorcycle. The most likely the Chapter 13 payment plan will be constructed so that the motorcycle payment and the other vehicle lease will continue to be paid directly by the debtor and won't be part of the Chapter 13. Chapter 13 will be paying their other debts. In fact, here, the Chapter 13 trustee may be pleased that the debtor went ahead and changed their monthly expenses and reduced what they're spending, because now what happens is there's actually more money for the Chapter 13 plan. So the idea that the debtor has may be a good one, may not be a good one. There's too many other factors. So they can do this. They may have a higher Chapter 13 than if they did not get the motorcycle. It's difficult to say, but it's really not a problem. Won't be anything negative with regard to getting a Chapter 13 plan approved. And again, as you can see, the one question leads to another, sort of branches off like a tree, and there's always these issues that need to be determined in any type of consultation.
Yeah, there's a lot there, but it's easy to unpack it one by one, and that is what people can expect when they go to visit one of your offices. So for people who want to know more information, maybe just to see what they're up against. Again, you don't need to be at the, you know, at the door to financial ruin and everything is going falling up. I mean, just getting information is all you're doing by calling Joseph Robel Limited. They'll walk you through it, explain it. Here's my options. I mean, some of these, you know, you've got someone who might be worried about a $3,700 student loan. You might also have someone worried about foreclosure and saving their home from being, you know, out on the street. So, again, you know, anytime bad things can happen to good people, and that's what the laws are there to protect people with. Bankruptcy has great options. Joe, how do they get in touch with you and learn more information?
Well, a number of different ways. They can check out our website at chicagobankruptcy.com. The podcasts are there. Some videos are there explaining basics. A lot of information for the general public looking into bankruptcy. They can call us at 312-781-0996. And check out reviews on avvo.com, avvo.com. They can find out what other clients have thought about our services.
Very good. Well, as always, I learn something new every time, and I enjoy the program. It's good information. I'll tell people about it. I hope that people here also listening, when they run into this, will also share the information. So I want to thank you all, and everyone have a great weekend.
All right. Thank you, Nick. Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon, Joe. Bye-bye.